Hello and welcome to Two Blokes Trading. Join us, the two blokes, Tom and Owen, as we dive deep into the complex, exciting and potentially lucrative world of home trading.
This week on the Two Blokes Trading podcast, we discuss the flash crash, we kick off Equities Month with our known unknowns and unknown unknowns, and we talk to Chris Beecham of IG Index about trading equities using leverage. Good morning, Tom.
Morning.
How's life?
Absolutely superb, but it's starting to get a bit chilly around the old Blighty these days.
Yeah, 4 degrees here in the south, so I can't imagine what it is up you in the blighted north.
I'm not that far north, right?
Midlands, yeah, fair enough.
South Midlands, if anything.
Oh, right. Is there a... Okay. How's your life in trading?
It's going all right. So, obviously, I've broken away from the fundamental side of things. Again, just trying out different things, and I'm now gone to having a basic rule structure, but trying to stick to it with a basic risk reward and just doing using the things we've learned, especially from obviously the book that we read and all that kind of stuff, just seeing if I can stick to a basic trading system with a basic risk reward and just seeing what kind of returns it gives me over a few weeks. So, and I'll let you know how that goes in a bit, mate. It's going all right at the moment.
All right. Are you going to reveal what the system is, or do we have to wait in giddy anticipation of the big reveal later on?
No, I certainly don't want you to wait because I don't think it's that exciting. I'm waiting for it to bounce off the 50 moving average on the hourly charts following the trend, basically.
Okay.
Looking for a 2-to-1 risk reward ratio. It is so basic, and I know that people think slapping their heads, but I just want to prove to myself that I can follow a basic system. Like I said, you know, at the moment it's actually the only system I've done so far that's over a week or 2 weeks has provided a constant turn on investment going in the right direction.
So sort of with a trend and then waiting for a small retracement to the 50 period and then trading with the trend and hoping that gives you a bit of a discount on the prevailing price and then...
Exactly.
It makes sense.
Yeah, it allows me to have a really small risk on that because it's obviously I'm just looking for it to go... My risk is, you know, 15 odd pips over the moving the 50 moving average. So I'm only looking for a 30 pip move essentially.
Right. And are you paying any attention then to fundamentals in as much as if there's clearly a giant move because something has happened with oil in the Canadian dollar, like Brandon was talking about, or you know, when non-farm payrolls comes out, that will obviously have a sustained effect if there's a big news. Are you kind of just ignoring that, or are you just sort of saying stay away from those events?
If there's a big news announcement, like an NFP or something similar, then yeah, I'm going to keep my eye out for it and make sure either I'm not in the trade or I bring my stop loss up to be extremely tight so that if it does go in my direction, then obviously happy days. And if it doesn't, then at least I'll be breaking even with that trade. So
similar to, I think Morris was talking about how he sort of had a relatively low risk amount, bring that up to break even and then try and ride the winner in the momentum of the, in the direction of the trend. Yeah.
So what about you?
Well, so I actually, weirdly enough, I was on the sidelines for one of the most momentous weeks in trading recently, and we'll get onto that in a moment. But I am in the process of putting together, writing in my blood on a stone tablet and sort of putting in the British Museum for all to see my trading system, my setup. So what is the setup that I'm looking for? Because over that period of time talking to Brandon Turner, I got a good feel for sentiment and looking at the fundamentals, and I like the idea. I like his system. I like trading in the direction of the sentiment. What I was having problems with was the psychology of it and also where to get in and get out. And so what I'm doing is putting together what I would call my setup. So what does a perfect trade look like for me? What are the parameters around that I would accept? And not trading again really until probably sort of middle of this week when it's finalized. And so I know what that looks like because I am going out on a limb too many times because there's no structure for me. There's nothing that says that is a trade and that is not a trade. It's all guesswork. It's all me saying, yeah, that's definitely right. And I've took some big losses on trading things where I thought I could predict which direction the market was going to go, which is as we know from our reading recently, if people listen to the last episode, is not actually a way to make money in trading consistently.
So I was actually
on the sidelines for last week.
So are you going to backtest this, or you in order to build that confidence that trading in the zone talks about? And where are you going to pick these indicators from?
I can look into that, but I think it's going to be quite difficult to backtest it because it's based around sentiment, which is it's a more nebulous concept. And it, as Brandon was saying last week, it takes experience to know, to judge, and it is a slightly subjective. But it's less indicators and more a basic confluence of factors. I might look at the Fibonacci stuff. I'm looking into that, looking at things like the 50 moving average, actually, support and resistance lines, basically looking for a confluence of a certain number of factors saying that this is a good time to buy, but that my reading of the fundamentals, the news and the sentiment to tell me if the trend that is clearly in place is going to stay in place, you know, in terms of the basic overall market direction.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, but, it makes sense.
Last week, like if in the week before, and probably this week, if you'd said cable is going down and a pound is coming off, fine. But when do you get in? When do you get out? And how do you have discipline around that? You know, it doesn't take a genius to say pound, you know, the pound is falling. You know,
there's no when to get in, not to get in. I mean, that's the only thing I struggle with your system is that I need, you know, the confidence of, because even if you're right one or two or three times, why are you right? What's the thing that you can quantify saying this is what's proving that I am right, therefore over time I am going to be right more often than not. That builds the confidence in the system. You won't second guess myself if I was doing it.
It's really interesting that some people would look at the way Brandon was doing it and say that's just not for me because it's not cut and dried, there's room for interpretation, whereas I look at it and say the fact there is room for interpretation and that it is based on understanding what is happening means that I will have confidence in it, weirdly enough. So when I look at the market and make a decision, even on a small percentage of the trade, based on looking at the information in front of me, not just looking at patterns and repeatable patterns, that gives me more confidence because I would back myself to be right about that thing more often than not. Mm. And I'd be happier taking a position if I understood why, the real world reasons of why, even though lots of people would completely disagree with that and say you could never know why. But then, it's about finding a good place to get in and get out. And that is about using some of the tools that, you know, every trader uses, not just picking a high or a low and getting it wrong every time.
It's just so frustrating. So the whole worst, it just, there's so much confusing information out there that I think we just got to stop second guessing ourselves and go with whatever feels right for us and just see how it goes.
Yeah. And I was in real danger of just completely hammering my trading account if I kept just trading or setting this idea up. It's a shame that one of the most obvious and long-term trends and movements happened with the pound the week I wasn't trading, but I resisted the urge to just go and jump straight in on something. And possibly with good reason, possibly without, it depends, I suppose, on the direction of things. But obviously, we had a pretty momentous event with this flash crash, as they're branding it, in the pound between Thursday and Friday. So it's sort of the Thursday evening Asian session. You and I haven't really lived through a flash crash before.
No.
Not since we've been traders. So I thought that what we should do is we should dial up someone who is a professional trader who has lived through them and get his thoughts. So I dialed up Jose Ricarte Jaén from Guardian Trust FX. And this is what he had to say. Jose, welcome to the Two Blokes Trading Podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, guys.
Obviously, myself and Tom, not being professional traders, thought it would make sense to talk to someone like yourself who does this for a living about the events last week. Start with a pretty basic question, I suppose. What is a flash crash?
Well, I suppose a more easygoing definition would be to say it's just like a stab in the back for most traders. it's pretty much something that you don't expect. This time it happened just out of the blue. It happened during the Asian session, which actually people think it was just like a surprise. But at the end of the day, it was something really good, because otherwise, just imagine yourself, if this is something take place during the London session, probably the pound will be already against the US dollar 110, maybe. Mm-hmm. Because more people will be there to take action, including not just new traders like you guys, but also the big trading desks. And they have no mercy. Doesn't matter what it is.
So it could exacerbate it. Yeah, it's basically when the price just falls off very, very quickly. There can be a reason, but sometimes people don't know. Would you define it then basically as a huge drop in price?
But besides the huge drop in price, something like, I will say, is a flow of excesses in orders. Usually, in this case, you probably always relate a flash crash with a big short sell position, mainly. And what happens if you review a couple of tweets, it's basically people saying, okay, it's an algorithm, it was a fat finger, and I think we could just gotta stop with, you know, blaming fat people. That gotta stop. And but when you focus your attention on algo trading, in fact, there is a valid statistic reason to think like, yeah, it was an algorithm, but not doing something crappy or something wrong. So you see, all these computers, they have their positions, they block positions align within certain levels. And if by any reason they get there, they just start, you know, to sequence. And probably someone knew what was happening, and they knew where the positions were right there, and they just pushed all the way the price.
So it's like a dominant effect.
Yeah. It's a dominant effect. I mean, yeah. At some point, it's just like the poor computer is just doing what they were programmed to do. So
you and have they to get take hammered it in the press. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, one of the reasons you see is like if there is an out of the blue situation. Yeah, you can also say that flash crashes out of the blue situation, although they're more common now. At some point, also, it's going to buy it with everything it has available. So you see, people just experience like 800 points maybe on the pound dollar, but the pound Canadian, that's 1,700 pips.
Mm-hmm.
Pound Swiss franc was something similar. So a lot of money was made as well. Not only lost, but big bucks were made.
So what do you think triggered the first computer then? What was the an algorithm clearly said, right, let's start pushing this down. What was it that triggered that? Because we hit the sort of the low since Brexit, but we hit it a few times before. There didn't seem to be anything particularly special about 12 o'clock London time, you know, on Thursday.
Well, to say, I will only say that I would say probably 120, 124, 125 were the selling points, the levels. You have to think about this in how the computer sees everything. Nothing has to be. And I probably see that the issue with retail traders is that they were looking for information why it happened, because you're still thinking like a human, which is fine. You're not a computer, but then you're looking for information in any other websites, you know, just mention, let's say Bloomberg. But I believe I was the only one tweeting in the world. I actually just posted one tweet and it was funny. And I'm tweeting and exchanging information and nobody was awake doing anything. And I'm like, mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. So we cannot say it was planned. You see, you know, you have now Mark, Dr. Carney from Bank of England asking the Bank of International Settlement, hey, can you look into this? Yeah, can you open an investigation? Like, what for, man? Don't vote out next time, please. So there's a lot of things you have to consider. The most important is that you got to prepare yourself.
Yeah, I saw something on online that was suggesting the timing may have coincided with a publication of an article or a commentary piece from François Hollande, you know, the French premier, who basically said that he was going to negotiate hard and not give concessions to the British over Brexit. Somewhere, yeah, someone suggested, oh, maybe an algorithm saw that and read the language and started selling, and that made all these triggers happen. Does that sound plausible, that one online news source could quote a guy and
Yes, absolutely. Remember that. Keep in mind that we have make such a massive progress when it comes to algorithms reading news. I'm not going to discount the fact that it may happen. I'm still going to play with the fact that, you know, the block orders actually were the ones that trigger everything.
Yeah.
But you never know. I mean, there's so much new things out there that we don't have access to. It can be possible. But hey, at the end of the day, I think all goes back to a bad decision. June 23rd.
So do you think this is going to keep happening, or happening more and more, the flash crashes, due to the, you know, algo trading becoming more prevalent, or is it?
Absolutely. But you have to keep in mind, and I always say, keep in mind, you know, you have to be aware. We're in a new age, a very challenging age. FX trading is one of the most challenging endeavors that you may want to join, right? Or pursued. So right now it's everything about technology. So you need a great platform. You need a great broker as far as where you're getting your liquidity. Here's the funny thing. So you have this in mind, and everyone that is listening. So in Australia, the low was 115.99. In London, it was not 119. And in Cyprus, it was 120. So think about it.
Wow.
And so we're not operating on a global price then. It's very much depending where you're getting your price from.
Yeah, and in that sense, we can, right there know who is actually, a market maker playing against you a little bit. But also that opens doors to opportunities. So it goes both ways. Now, what you say is also true. It's actually becoming more and more common. These computers are not going to hold back on like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm going to help the United Kingdom. No, you've made a bad decision. We're going to just take you down.
Obviously, we talked about some fairly advanced stuff there in terms of looking at where you're getting your liquidity and different bottoms on the crash and depending on location. For a more beginner trader or a less advanced trader, someone who's just trying to maybe trade a technical system or something relatively standard, who isn't a large player, who may even be trading, say, CFDs or spread betting, so not actually entering into the market proper, With the prevalence of these crashes, with the increasing frequency, what are some basic things that I should be doing to ensure that I don't end up on the wrong side of one of these crashes?
I will say three things to, like follow instructions. Number one, always make sure that you're dealing with a tier one broker. I won't say names unless they pay you guys, but... I always try to focus with a big broker, so mm-hmm. to have sort of that support, that liquidity with everything you may be trading, call it CFDs, configuration of the accounts, spread betting, is very important. Work with a very regulated broker. So far, I would say London, but you never know what's going to happen next. But I will keep trading with London. Australia will be my second choice, and then lastly, no offense to anyone, I will have Cyprus, but. That will be second, trade small positions. I know this is hard because people want to make money overnight. You want to walk away with the big bucks, but it's progressive. So if you had a little position, you lose little. If you have a lot of big position, you lose a lot. Mm-hmm. And because trading derivatives, CFDs, FX spot, those are derivatives, it's high risk business. And you can actually, if you don't remember this, your capital is at risk and you can end up losing more that you have in your account, and then you have to send a nice extra to your broker. It's always good that you keep it small. There's no need to break the bank yet. You just want to make little. And the third thing I will say is just be aware that this will happen again. This is not the last time, and it will happen again. Now, I will stress this. Thank God it happened during the Asian session. That we got to be thankful because if it were the London session, we wouldn't have this conversation right now. Yes. A lot of people, I mean, they won't have any time. It would be chaos.
There were that many fewer people in the market at the time that it was contained. I mean, I wasn't like, I for these sort of reasons, I always close all my trades before the end of the day. I don't like having trades intraday, if you like. You just never know what's going to happen these days. And like you say, with some of these trading systems, sort of CFDs, spread betting, I don't want to have to write a check to the broker because, they've blown out my stop loss because it wasn't fixed or whatever,
I will add something there. One of the practices with trading desks, professional traders, is that they close out positions on Friday. They don't, and myself, I'm, getting used to, with a little bit of manual training that I do, the discipline. And this is something for the audience to understand. You will never be a Goldman Sachs or JP Morgan. That's it. You won't be there. You don't need to be like them. But sometimes it's good to pay attention to what they do, why they do it. And one of the they do that is very good is that most of the time they're not hedging. Let's say if you're not BMW and you need to hedge your currency position, like 5 years in a forward product, you basically every Friday you close your positions. Exactly what you say. And that's a great habit. But sometimes people just, they overnight hold that position. If you do that, please make yourself a favor, place your stop.
And maybe pay for a fixed stop if you're overnight. You never know what's going to happen. Like a guaranteed stop.
I mean, also like an insurance. Like if you were playing blackjack, you don't know what they have, so you want to insure your position just in case. I mean, if you have a big hand, like if you have a couple lots, if you are, you want to be fancy about that, you have a couple lots, you may want to, you know, as you said, pay the fee to ensure your position, because you never know.
You never know. And then one time it happens, you'll be glad you paid those few pennies each time. Well, Jose, really appreciate you coming on the pod for a few minutes to talk us through that. Obviously, a really interesting event, something we're quite privileged to have lived through early in our trading careers and seen what happens and hopefully learn some lessons. So, yeah, thanks for coming on. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks to you guys. Always a pleasure.
Bullboard is a powerful stock screening application now available in the App Store. Download Bullboard to your iPhone today for effortless screening of thousands of shares. Set up your criteria, swipe your sentiment, and create watch lists of future trading opportunities. With backtesting functionality and the ability to create multiple portfolios, Bullboard is the most powerful stock screening application on the market. Visit bullsboard.com, bullsboard.com, or go to the App Store to download Bullboard to start screening stocks from your iPhone today. Tom, so some really interesting analysis from Jose there. It seems to me then that something triggered the first thing, and no one really knows what. I mean, Carney wouldn't be calling in for an investigation if it was cut and dried what caused the first move. Mm-hmm. But what does seem clear is that the overwhelming negative sentiment towards the British economy post-Brexit, the huge amounts of uncertainty. Obviously, there are people that believe the exact opposite, and we know which way Jose's politics lies in this particular situation. But he would appear to be right to say that, you know, these block orders that these institutions have placed at all these prices on the way down are presumably because these institutions are saying, if we hit this price, that's because it is not going well, because Brexit is... or maybe even the lead up to Brexit, the potential for Brexit is overwhelmingly negative. If we hit this price, let's get in and sell, because it's only going one way. Mm-hmm. And I suppose maybe they didn't realize it was just going to get triggered, like, you know, but it did. And that's what caused this flash crash, according to Jose, which makes total sense. You know, there just weren't any buyers at those levels, because it was, if it were hitting those levels, it's because bad things happening to Britain and therefore the pound.
Yeah.
And then obviously it bounced right back up, because I presume there were people awakening at their desk who went, well, this is ridiculous. It's not worth 600 pips less than it was 45 minutes ago. And I suppose the total fall off was 200 pips. And then after that, on Friday over the weekend, it's ranged along 200 pips or so less than it was, you know, before the crash. So clearly the market does believe that that we're now hit a different fair value. But it's Monday morning. Let's see what happens. Obviously, we are now entering equities month. Really excited about this, because we've done a lot of forex trading the last three and a half months, and no equities trading at all, really. Are you looking forward to it?
Yeah, I really am looking forward to it, and I'm looking forward to getting some different kind of guests on and just learning about different way to try and make money from the markets. There's so much that we really, really don't know about this. It's not even funny. It's like we're starting almost the podcast from scratch again, trading a different asset.
It's the famous Donald Rumsfeld quote, isn't it? You know, we know our known unknowns. So we know what we don't know. We don't know how to screen an equity. We don't really know anything about how you sort of create an idea in your mind of the value of that. But what we also have is the unknown unknowns, and they're the ones that scare us. We don't know what we don't know.
Which is why we need to get some people that do know that on, to give us some of their sage words of wisdom.
Indeed, yeah. If only we had a podcast to attract those people to talk.
Exactly, yeah, that's my mission for this week, isn't it? Get away and get some quality guys on the podcast. My big questions are, so can you trade equities like you can technically, analyze them like you can the Forex market, or is it completely different? Do different indicators work within the industry, or is it purely done on fundamentals of that specific, you know, share?
Yeah, I'm certain there must be technical traders. I mean, I think we've heard from a couple of guys who've indicated that might be the area. But like you, I have no idea if they use different technical indicators, if the same things hold true, if things like the Fibonacci thing is because that's meant to just be in nature, you know, just part of the universe's makeup, those ratios. So I guess people probably use them for equities. But we don't know, do we? We have no idea.
Yeah, because, you know, for example, a spurious company with their shares, you know, there are going to be a finite number of people watching those stocks and shares, whereas yeah. Something like the currencies, like cable, you've got billions, millions, whatever that is. And so surely the patterns will be more self-fulfilling when you've got so many people watching, keeping their eye out.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point. But again, we don't know, do we? So no. But the first thing I want to answer, the big question for me is, you know, when I think about shares and stocks and shares, and they're much closer, I think, to the popular culture imagination of, you know, buy, 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 sell, 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 you know, Gordon Gekko and all that. Mm-hmm. But no one really understands what's going on there. But people, I suppose, view it more as investing, you know, where you would buy and you hold a share. You say, all right, I believe that, you know, Acme Anvils is undervalued. And therefore, I'm going to buy their shares and hold on to them. And that I'm, you know, I'm an investor now. Look at me. I'm like Warren Buffett, whatever. You know, and if I make 10% a year, I'm a genius. Now, Forex traders have a much grander ambition of percentage they'll make in a year. Maybe equities traders do as well. So what is the difference between trading equities and investing them? Mm-hmm. And you know, for us, we're spread betting. A lot of people be using CFDs. You know, how can you trade those using those sort of platforms, using leverage to try and make greater returns than simply buy and hold forever, and where you need tens of thousands of pounds to even buy half the shares because, you know, a share is like 600 quid or whatever. What's the difference? Can you do it? So first things first, we need a guest that's going to answer that question for us. So we've got a guy called Chris Beecham, who is sort of head market analyst at IG Index, very experienced personal trader himself. And obviously watches the markets closely in his job. So really interested to find out what he's going to say about trading equities using leverage. Two Blokes Trading welcomes Chris Beecham from IG Index. Chris joined IG Index in 2010 and is now head of market analysis. Chris, hello.
Hello.
You are here to talk to us a little bit about equities and sort of trading those using leverage. But first, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and your role at IG?
Yeah, certainly. I've been in IG for about 6 years now, really, as you mentioned. Really, it has been, I think, a case of learning as we go, really. Certainly from my perspective, I didn't really know that much about leverage when I started, but it has been an interesting period, really. We've seen a lot of volatility in the markets, and it has been quite certainly fun, really, from one perspective. In terms of my background, I'm very much an equities trader by upbringing, if you like. It's how I got started in the stock market, and it has been my sort of abiding passion. I do my own private investing as well, so I can combine all those things together. In terms of IG, of course, we've got bigger and bigger, really, with the spread betting and now, of course, the stockbroking and ETFs. So it's been very much an area of growth over the last couple of years.
Obviously, IG Index has a reputation being the oldest and sort of biggest, as you say, in the spread betting and I guess CFD trading as well. But so there's a stockbroking arm, sort of like a share dealing arm, or still sort of a leverage trading system?
Yes, we've got the leverage end of things, the spread betting, the CFDs, but we've also now we've got the stockbroking service, which has been running for about a year or so. You've also got ETFs and the managed portfolios, which is something we're looking at further down the line. So you've got the entire spectrum of risk, if you like. You've got leverage trading and the high activity end of the spectrum towards ETFs and the sort of low cost, cheaper element that applies here, really. That's certainly been perhaps an area of growth, because it sort of appeals to an area of the market that we haven't been able to tap into so far. So we're looking forward to expanding that as we go on through the next couple of years.
Oh, great. That fundamental question, I suppose, of if I'm interested in equities, I'm interested in buying, selling shares, when do I want to do that through an account that gives me leverage and maybe therefore comes with attendant costs of overnight costs, that sort of thing? And when do I want to say, actually, no, I'm holding it for this period of time, more investing maybe. Now I want to be looking at actually just going to a share dealing account and just buying those equities, whichever stocks I've picked. Because I'm not sure on when I should be doing one or the other if I want to go down the equities route.
I think if you're going to use leverage where equities are concerned, then you're paying far more attention to the major events, if you like. You're looking at the earnings announcements that come out. You often see a lot of volatility in the stock around that time, and you're clearly looking perhaps for a more defined time frame, if you like, perhaps using an hourly chart or so, rather than sticking to the daily charts that you might use in the longer term. If you're certainly looking around, then you might want to pay more attention to entry points, and because you're using leverage, and therefore you've got the element where you need to be aware that you could rapidly see the position turn against you. Losses could potentially exceed deposits. So you are if you're looking at certainly daily funded bets and the overnight funding, it's a trade that would last up to about 3 or 4 months. So you can take a relatively long-term view, but certainly it is the sense that leverage tends to be the shorter-term trade, looking to exploit perhaps a brief dip in the share price. If you've got one that's a good trend and it suddenly sells off for no apparent reason, you can then jump in. Or just to think, perhaps this one's looking overvalued in the shorter term, I'll just try and catch that as well. For the longer term, okay, you're clearly trying to take a view that lasts months or even years, and that changes your perspective on things. And clearly, because you're not using leverage, you don't have to worry quite so much about the margin and the funding in your account. You can let a position, if you like, move against you. If you're looking to take that view that lasts over 3, 4, 5 years, that says, actually, I'm prepared to stick with this share as an investment rather than just trying to ride the momentum in a trade. So even if it's having a period of underperformance, I still think it's a good company. I still think the shares look attractive.
Okay, yeah, makes total sense, I suppose. If it's sort of a buy and hold strategy, then you can invest and go through a stockbroking account. But if it's trading a news event or trading a particular short-term trend, then I guess using leverage, if you're confident, gives you that chance to maximize your earnings from that trade. Yeah, cool. All right. And so what are some of the pitfalls or dangers associated with trading equity specifically using leverage? I mean, we've talked a lot about currencies trading on the show, but you know, I haven't yet spread bet or CFD traded equities, and I suppose it seems like it might be quite a different marketplace, really. I mean, are there specific attendant risks?
There are, to some degree, yes. It does require you to be aware of the classic tools of risk management, if you like, to risk only a certain amount of your trade and have a defined stop loss. So say, if this trade moves against me, I know how much I'm prepared to lose. You don't want to let that run away with you, because if you take a position with leverage and then you just let it move further and further into the red, and then you can find your losses mount up very, very quickly. That is the key thing to remember with leverage trading in any market, whether it's shares or whether it's FX and commodities and indices, is that these things can move around very, very quickly. And I think it's the important thing to know how much you're prepared to risk. It's always the case that people look at a chart and they think, well, if I bought it here and sold it here, I could have made X. But you should always try and flip that over and actually say, actually, I should be worried about how much I could lose and how that would affect my account. Yeah. Rather than how much I could win. Because your key thing here is preservation of capital. I think Warren Buffett always said rule number one in financial markets is don't lose money. And that sounds a bit glib, but I think it's the approach to take, is that you want to say, I have this amount in my account, and if I lose this amount, it's not going to seriously affect my overall position. I don't want to let that run away with me.
Right. And I suppose also, if you're trading currencies, you're unlikely to be in, I don't know, max like 4 or 5 trades, very max really, because there aren't that many options. But I guess if you're shares trading and rather than indexes, but proper, you know, picking and choosing shares, there's a lot of different markets you could be in. And I suppose maybe a risk there that's specific to that would be if you're quickly stacking up trades, if, you know, a lot of things are passing your screening tests or whatever, then the more and more of those you get, the more chances you're going to be taking up more and more of your margin, and that risk of the horrendous margin call happening, particularly if the whole market, say, takes a downswing or whatever, I guess that's magnified if you go a bit crazy and start getting in too many trades.
Yeah, you do have that element. I think perhaps it's something that actually you can borrow an idea from fund management, because a lot of fund managers, they own so many stocks that are effectively tracking the index anyway. And so if, as you flag up, if you open so many trades on FTSE 100 stocks just because they pass the test that you're looking for, and then suddenly you find that you might as well be trading the FTSE 100 itself anyway, because if you aggregate them all together, you're just sort of tracking the index and its rises and its falls. So you do have to be perhaps a bit more selective with this kind of thing. And again, it goes back to the important points of risk management, that you should be trading with amounts that don't cause you to lose sleep. The old cliche on Wall Street was that scared money never wins. And if you're constantly worrying about your position, then you're clearly probably using too much leverage. Whereas if you're trading with very, very small amounts and you know, okay, if that moves against me, it's not the end of the world. And then you can increase the number of positions you have. But again, You see it with a lot of traders. They have so many that the flashing screens, the blue and red, and then are not able to keep a close eye on them, really, or not able to look after them as they should do, really, because it is the fact that you need to keep a fairly close eye on what's going on, just because you are using that leverage with its attendant risks.
Yeah, because I worried I'd end up like a kid in a sweet shop, you know, sort of There's so much choice, you just end up choosing everything.
Yeah, that is often the way. Just because it's there on the platform doesn't mean you have to trade it. You don't think, oh, I haven't traded BP for a while. I wonder what happens when I do this. And you need to have, excuse me, a clear reason for why you're entering a trade, and indeed, of course, why you're exiting a trade. And so that implies even more than it would do if you were just investing on your own ISA account, as it were.
And do you think there's maybe a risk that, I suppose, because shares seem, they're more in the public consciousness, maybe they seem safer. You know, currencies trading, for those that don't trade, it seems exotic, and therefore people go in with their eyes open maybe, and it seems risky. People are very used to the concept of shares trading and buying and selling stocks. So do you think there's a risk maybe that people could be diving in a bit too quickly? Because it actually, in reality, using leverage, that the price fluctuations do mean just as big wins and losses, and people might not necessarily be thinking about that in the right way. They're thinking more sort of Warren Buffett style investing, but then actually the way they're trading doesn't reflect that.
There is, I think that's true to a certain extent. If you're using FX, it's a 24-hour market, and it is for commodities and indices as well. So even when you're sleeping, the market is still moving around. So there's a sense of it. There's a lot more risk as well at that point. Whereas with shares, at least, say, for the FTSE 100, it closes at 4:30 on a Monday and opens again at 8 a.m. the next day. So you've got that period where you can take a step back and look at them each day. But you do have to be careful, because you will get big moves. And if you're trading with leverage, those moves can be amplified. We had Redrow, the house builder, today announcing it was increasing its dividend by 20%. And the news was good overall from the results. So the shares have jumped 5%. Now, that's 5% on an ISA account. That's a big enough move. But if you're using leverage, that can be magnified up quite rapidly. So if you'd been perhaps bearish on Redrow, if you like, if you'd expected the shares to fall after the results and suddenly they rally 5%, you can rapidly find yourself on the wrong side of a trade. And you do get equally sudden news with equities. We've become used to it with FX and indices over the last few years, with the Eurozone crisis, with oil, with China, that you get sudden announcements that cause the price to move rapidly. But it can happen as well in equities, a profit warning out of nowhere suddenly causes the shares to drop, or a change in regulation, any kind of thing really can rapidly come into play, and the share price does move just as quick really as FX and commodities. And you're right that maybe people think that shares aren't quite as racy and as not quite dangerous, but as exciting as FX, but they can have their own pitfalls as well if you're not sure. If you know, plenty of people might open a position on a company ahead of results, but they might not know results are coming out because they've not done their homework. And it's even more important when you're trading with leverage to know when these key dates are, know when it goes ex dividend, know when its trading statement comes out, or when other events are coming through, because they can have a big bearing on the share price.
That's actually a really good point. Something I wanted to talk about was around dividends. So if I just go out and I buy BP shares, as you say, in a normal share dealing account, they announce a dividend, or the dividend is paid as per the schedule, then I have the option of having that paid out, or I can put that back in. And often it's just an automatic function. It's quite simple. When you're trading through, for instance, say a CFD account, and you're trading effectively a derivative of that product, how does it work when a dividend is paid out? How is that paid back to the person that holds that product, if they're long, I presume?
If you're long a share and the dividend is paid out, then that dividend is credited to your account, so you'll see an increase that's relevant to the size of your position.
So cash into your account rather than increasing the... Okay, gotcha. Okay.
So it's not like reinvesting dividends as you would through an ISA, where it simply buys more shares. The cash is credited directly to the account. And then the converse of that is that, of course, if you're short, then the dividend is taken out of your account as well, because you're expecting the shares to fall in price. So the adjustment is made there.
So it is important. And that's the same on spread betting as well?
That's the same on spread betting as well. Okay. So you get that reflected in the movements. So it's important to bear that one in mind, really, when you're trading those through leverage, that you can see movements in your account level either up or down because of the dividend. And ex-dividend is another key one to bear in mind, that they can move a share price significantly, particularly those high-yielding shares like utilities. There can be a big move on the back of that.
Mm. So being short around the dividend announcement is a greater risk. I mean, with currencies, if you're long or short, it doesn't really matter. You know, you're either right or wrong, or to certain degrees. But then, so if you're long over a dividend announcement, there might be a bonus. But if you're short, there might be an added. It very much weighs it one way in my mind, I suppose, which it doesn't happen in other markets.
I think, yeah, the it is something more important to bear in mind, that you can have that risk with if you're shorting it ahead of a dividend and you can get caught out by that. So people need to be clear in their mind of when dividends are being paid out, when dividends are changed, and how that will affect the share price. Shorting is always a problem with shares anyway, because clearly you're betting broadly against the herd. Most people will buy a share in the expectation it would rise, and I think a lot of people, the shorting is the same. You do it the same way in the account as you would going long. You just press the sell button rather than the buy button. But there's a lot more to bear in mind, that you can get sudden short squeezes if the share price starts to move higher. Other people have to close their short, and that causes the share price to move higher, and so on. And you can get a rapid snowballing effect. So, in one sense, shorting is. It's a good aspect of spread betting and CFDs, that you can short shares that are declining or you think might be overvalued. But remember, the broader base of the market probably still wants to expect the shares to go up. So in some sense, you're moving against the herd, and that can bring its own risk. You tend to, or you can see can sort of dramatic moves on the upside, even in the context of a longer term downtrend. And again, that takes you back to that risk management element.
That's a really interesting point. I hadn't really ever really thought about it like that. Obviously, with currencies, if you're trading cable, then there's no fundamental reason, you know, in terms of the product itself, why it would either go up or down, or long term forever go up and up and up. Whereas with equities, with shares, there is always an expectation that they're going to rise, that companies naturally will grow, and that the index itself, I suppose, will rise. And that's been a long term trend, I suppose, until recently. Everybody trading, if you like, was literally buying and then selling when you thought you had the most rise, rather than ever going short. So yeah, I never really thought about it like that. I guess you have to have completely different strategies then, and I suppose focus on, I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, most people use CFDs or spread betting for equities are about picking winners then, rather than necessarily looking both ways.
Well, I think if we look at sort of client sentiment data with the number of people long and short a particular share, and it is the case that with FX indices, it moves around a lot more. They can be 60% short the FTSE overall one day, and then a few days later, they can be 40% or rather 60% short, and then change around to be long again. So it does move around more. For shares, most people still tend to have that mindset of, I want to buy in the expectation it will go up. And clearly, when it is a bull market like it arguably is now, shares are more likely to go up than down. But you can still use the advantage of shorting. You just have to be even more aware of that risk management element. I always remember people saying you have to be an optimist fundamentally to invest in the stock market, and people do buy the share because you want it to go up from where it is now, because that means you make money. So that is the key thing to bear in mind, that there are probably more than a few people hoping that the shares will go up, and you're going against that. So you do get you do get great long-term downtrends in companies. Look at the mining sector from sort of 2012. It just lost value, and it was looking at it now dispassionately, you can say, well, it was a great short to sell all the miners like Glencore and BHP and Rio and watch them just continue to fall. But at some point that turns around, and even in the context of a longer term downturn, you get sudden snap back rallies because some good news comes out and people think actually the prospects have changed, even if then they keep going back down again. And it's knowing when to, not always trying to time it perfectly, but trying to be more careful in picking your entry points so that you're not caught out by those sudden rallies to the upside.
So you have to be very confident and have a very defined set of reasons for going short, I suppose, even more so than rest of the time. Okay, so I'm interested to talk a little bit about why someone would choose the equities market rather than, say, Forex, because it does seem that people tend to, after a while, narrow down on one area which they trade. And, you know, it looks like I'm at the moment majority trading Forex. Tom, similar, he's done some commodities. When we spoke to John Walsh, the Black Cabby Trader, he very much traded equities, usually US equities. It sounds like you're much more interested in that side of things, equities yourself, Chris. Do you think it pays to specialize? How much would you need to specialize? And why do you think it would be that some people go equities rather than currencies, and what might be the advantages?
And I'm slightly torn on the specialization argument, because I can see the value in picking a market. There's nothing wrong with getting to know the moods and the ins and outs of a particular market, especially for companies, because if for share trading, you have got that element of, you can look at the fundamentals, you can pour through the income report and look at where the revenues are and where the improvements are, and look at its valuation versus the rest of the sector or the broader market. Whereas for FX, it's very much more you're part of a bigger flow, a much bigger flow in terms of the money, because people are buying and selling currencies, not for just for speculative reasons, but for investment reasons and various others. So I think for one sense, I could argue if you're using, for example, charts, a chart is a chart no matter what you're looking at. It doesn't matter really what the asset is. You should be using the same approach of risk management, whatever you're trading. But some people will find that equities, they prefer the fact that they can not only look at the chart and see whether it's rising or falling and where the dips are and where the rallies are, but also the fact that they can also they can look at the income statement, the earnings reports, the chairman's statement, the fund management research that goes with it, and form an opinion that way. So you've got more of a fundamentals element to come through rather than just the pure tech analysis side. And people, I suppose it's slightly more tangible that you've got a company you can say, it's doing well because of X, Y, Z, and the share price should support that. And other people prefer the fact that it's not a 24-hour market. It's the fact that they can watch it from 8 o'clock till 4:30 for UK shares and from 2:30 till 9 o'clock for US shares. Although bear in mind at IG, we do have all sessions US shares that trade 24 hours as well, like indices. And right. But some people prefer the fact that they can just have those periods when the market's closed and they can look at their performance for the day or the week and then try and form an opinion. Whereas perhaps with indices or FX, it's always moving, so there's always information to take into account. But there's a lot of argument to be made for you should find an area you're comfortable with, and if that is equities, and be that either large cap stocks like Tesco or BP that move around quite a bit during the course of the day because they're fairly liquid, there's a lot of activity going on, or you have the opposite end of the spectrum with AIM stocks, which obviously an entire different set of fundamentals and activity comes into play. So it's good to maybe, for most people, try and pick something that they're comfortable with and stick with it. And there's nothing wrong with that. If you just traded one company on your leverage platform and you just traded Tesco and nothing else, there's nothing wrong with that at all if you're just happy doing okay. that. And you know it inside out. There's a lot of merit in that approach, I think.
All right. Cool. And is that what attracts you to that then, the sort of the research and having more to go on than just sort of chart patterns and things? Is that sort of tick your box a bit more?
Yeah, I think that it's, again, you can make an argument to say, well, eventually all the news is reflected in the price anyway, so you can just use the chart. But I think that's a lot of people will get into shares because you can spend time with the reports and getting to know the company. And it makes you think, especially if you're investing in it through an ISA or a non-leverage, you sort of feel part of the company, whereas maybe shorter-term spread betting, you're just doing them on momentum. But there is a far more, almost a physical element, if you like, that you can latch onto, and you can form an opinion that way as well.
Because it does appeal to me, and but equally it scares me, and it scares me for the time commitment. I think, you know, okay, so if I'm going to be buying a share, then I have to personally decide that it's undervalued, which means I have to do so much research. And I know I can see myself going down a little rabbit warren where you just go further and further and further and further. And I guess eventually you have to make the decision. So it does appeal, but it scares me slightly about where my life would end up going, you know.
I think that applies for sort of everything, really, not just shares trading, that you could almost paralyze yourself with too much information at some point. You've just got to hit the button. And again, it always comes back to this risk management element of how much you're prepared to risk, because if you're happy with a trade because it's such a low level risk, then you don't really mind whether you win or lose essentially with the trade. And that's the best mindset to adopt, is to try and be as dispassionate as possible and not get too emotionally involved with a trade. It applies to long-term investment as well. You shouldn't marry the company, and just because it's going down and down and down, you wonder, well, what point do you give up? I remember watching a presentation for a fund manager that owned Tullow Oil. This was 2 or 3 years ago now, when Tullow Oil shares kept going down, and they said, well, we like Tullow Oil even though it keeps going down. I thought, well, what point are you going to fall out of love with Tullow Oil if it just keeps getting cheaper? You know, it has its own problems. And that applies even more with spread betting and CFDs. You shouldn't be married to your position. If it goes against you and you've got your stop loss in and that's hit and it's activated and the trade is closed, then that's how it should be. And you should then move on and learn from it and then try and find where the next potential opportunity might be coming from.
Cool, that's it. Brandon Turner, we've had on a couple of times now, he pinpointed some of my issues I've had recently, is definitely that psychology, you know, being able to be dispassionate with your trading. But we'll get there.
It's a long process, really. I think it's learning how you cope with risk and not just losing money, but also when things are going well, and not thinking that you've mastered it overnight and that you're about to, you know, break through and retire within the next couple of months. It's learning to deal with the good times and the bad times and trying to be as dispassionate as possible in both.
It's a funny old beast, isn't it? You read a couple of books, you think, oh, this should be quite simple. And then when you sit there and you think, if I didn't have to do anything, if I could just make analysis, I think I could be quite good at this.
Yeah, I've said it in so many seminars we have at IG. I said it's easy. It's simple rather, but it's not easy to do because there are so many factors you need to take into account that just outside of the pressing buy or sell. Sometimes when I'm demoing the platform to people and I just say, oh, what do you think we should do, buy or sell? And they just look at me because they're terrified of making a decision. I think, well, it's a demo account. It's not even my real money. You just do something. And they get sort of trapped by the worry of making a decision.
Well, Chris, it's been great speaking to you. And even in that short space of time, you've answered a whole bunch of questions I had, around both the functionality of trading equities using leveraged platforms, and also some of the things I really need to think about and be aware of if I'm going to start doing that as well. I'll certainly have a look at it. And like you say, then maybe whatever works for me, choose a specialized on that route. But thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so that was Chris Beecham from IG Index. Tom, what are your two main takeaways from that interview?
As this is getting on, I'll try and be as short as I can, but basically I've learned that if you're going to use leverage and you're looking at a short-term trade, or relatively short-term trade, look at the hourly charts, and if you are short on a particular share and they pay the dividends out, then you've got to keep aware of that because that will be debited to your account, and vice versa. If you're long it, then you'll then get credited with that account. Just something I didn't know that I'm going to take with me and try and identify what our next steps are.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Tom. I will see you back here next week then.
See you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Two Blokes Trading podcast with Tom and Owen. Be sure to subscribe and check out twoblokestrading.com, and we'll see you back here next Monday.